From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg held a press conference in Brussels on Friday at the close of the second day of a meeting of the North Atlantic Council of NATO at the level of defense ministers with what they termed EU partners. We bring you that press conference in its entirety.
Good afternoon. Defense ministers met today in the nuclear planning group. Our security environment continues to deteriorate, so our consultations are essential to ensure that NATO remains a credible nuclear alliance as long as nuclear weapons exist, to preserve peace, prevent coercion, and deter aggression. Today, allies also signed an agreement to establish a NATO Innovation Fund. I expect this fund to invest 1 billion euros with innovators across the alliance working on emerging and disruptive technologies. New technologies are reshaping our world and our security. NATO's new Innovation Fund will ensure allies do not miss out on the latest technology and capabilities that will be critical to our security. The NATO Innovation Fund is one part of a bigger picture. In tandem, NATO is building a defense innovation accelerator for the North Atlantic, what we call DIANA. As part of DIANA, allies are committed to provide a network of technology test centers and accelerator sites across the alliance to better harness civilian innovation for our security and strengthen the technological bond between Europe and North America. We need to ensure that allies are able to operate the different technologies seamlessly between their forces and with each other. At this ministerial, we also took another important decision for NATO's adaptation. Allies have agreed our first artificial intelligence strategy. It will set standards for responsible use of artificial intelligence in accordance with international law. Outline how we will accelerate the adoption of artificial intelligence in what we do, set out how we will protect this technology, and address the threats posed by the use of artificial intelligence by adversaries. We also met our close partners Finland and Sweden and the European Union. NATO-EU cooperation has already reached unprecedented levels. In cyberspace, we exchange information on threats and vulnerabilities in real time. In the Aegean Sea, our maritime mission works with the EU to implement their agreement with Turkey. And in Kosovo, NATO troops stand shoulder to shoulder with the EU diplomats to bring peace and stability to the region. I hope to strengthen our cooperation in other areas such as military mobility, resilience, emerging and disruptive technologies, and the security impact of climate change. I look forward to a new joint declaration on NATO-EU relations, which will set out areas for future cooperation. We must ensure that our approach to security remains coherent. I welcome the EU's increased efforts on defence. NATO has been calling on European allies to invest more and provide more high-end capabilities for many years. But these efforts should not duplicate NATO. What is needed is more capabilities, not new structures. Our transatlantic alliance remains the bedrock for our security, and Europe and North America will continue to stand strong together in NATO as we face a more competitive world. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay. We'll go to the middle of the third row, AFP, I think.
Thank you. Paul Hendley from AFP.
Sorry to change the subject a little bit, but last night President Joe Biden said that the U.S. has a commitment to defend Taiwan against China. Are your members concerned that NATO could be dragged into a conflict that the U.S. on based on a U.S. commitment like that?
So I will not speculate about hypothetical situation. I think what is important now is to reduce tensions in the area And if I started to speculate, I think I actually will contribute to the opposite. So we should solve all disputes and differences and disagreements in the region by political and diplomatic means.
Wegen?
Thank you. Mrs. Secretary General, you said yesterday that Norway's new approach to enter meetings on the nuclear ban treaty, they would be addressed in today's meeting. So what can you tell us?
Well, I will not go into the details of our internal discussions, but we had good and constructive deliberations today covering a wide range of nuclear issues, our nuclear posture, and also including the ban treaty. And it is important that the allies consult, especially on these issues, because they are of such great importance for all allies. And the importance of consultations was very much underlined during the meeting.
Okay, we'll go over them.
Michael Hem, Norwegian Defence News. Yesterday, Vladimir Putin said that Lloyd Austin's recent visit to Ukraine opened up for NATO membership, and that would be a threat to Russia. Should he be worried about that?
No, partly because NATO is a defensive alliance, and partly because it is for Ukraine and 30 NATO allies to decide when Ukraine is ready to join the alliance. No other country has any right to intervene or to have any say in that process, because Ukraine is a sovereign, independent nation, and sovereign, independent nations have the right to choose their own path, and therefore it is up to Ukraine to decide that they aspire for NATO membership, and then, of course, for 30 allies to decide when Ukraine is ready, when Ukraine meets the NATO standards. So the enlargement of NATO over the last decades have actually contributed to peace, stability throughout Europe, and therefore there is no way that Russia should be afraid of or have any right to try to veto or to stop any sovereign nation from joining the alliance.
Okay, NPR Deutsche Welle.
Hi, thank you very much, Terry Schultz. Was there talk about Turkey's possible threat to buy fighter jets from Russia being cut off now by the U.S. over the S-400 program? And, I mean, how much concern does this cause you, even if that wasn't specifically discussed here, that not only did Turkey not turn away from the S-400 deal, but that it may be looking toward Moscow for even more armaments? Thanks.
So this was not an issue discussed in this meeting. I and NATO allies have many times underlined that, of course, defense procurements are national decisions. What matters for NATO is that new capabilities are interoperable with NATO. And as I've stated before, the S-400 is a Russian system, not something we can integrate into the integrated air and missile defense systems of NATO, and it's not interoperable with NATO defense systems. That has been the message, and therefore we also looked into how we can support efforts to find alternative systems, and this work continues.
Defense News.
Thank you. Joe Gould, Defense News. On nuclear issues, President Biden indicated before taking office he believes the sole purpose of the U.S. nuclear arsenal is deterring or retaliating against a nuclear attack. With the U.S. nuclear posture review underway, what are allies saying about a potential sole purpose or no first use policy? Would that be wise? And what new nuclear investments were discussed? Thank you.
Well, at the meeting in the nuclear planning group, we discussed a wide range of issues. And I think this group and this format is important because it demonstrates that NATO is the platform where allies can consult on these issues, which are important for all allies. And the declaratory policies and uh, the U.S. nuclear policy review, of course, matters for the United States, but it matters also for all allies, for the whole alliance. And that's exactly why we need to consult, and that was the main message on all these issues, that we need to consult, we need to develop common positions and speak with one voice, because what matters is that we remain strong and united on all issues, but especially when it comes to nuclear issues. So allies welcomed that Secretary Austin updated and consulted with allies on this issue. And I also know that Secretary Austin will be here after me, so of course he can then say more about what he said. But allies agreed, and we welcome that we will continue to consult on a wide range of issues, including the nuclear posture review.
Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Secretary General, a quick follow-up on that from a German perspective. Two of the three parties that are currently negotiating to form a government have in the past called for the withdrawal of US tactical nuclear weapons from German soil. The third party, the Liberals, had a foreign minister 10 years ago who already tried to do this once. What effect would it have if the German government would, the new German government, would call on the withdrawal of US tactical nuclear weapons from Germany?
As it's not for me to go into those negotiations, but what I can say is that the nuclear sharing arrangements in NATO, they are important for the whole alliance and especially for European allies, because that is a way to ensure that we all are part of NATO's nuclear deterrence, that European allies have a say, that that they sit around the same table and are able to also take responsibility, but also have a say when it comes to how to develop NATO's nuclear deterrence. NATO's goal is a world without nuclear weapons. But as long as other countries retain their nuclear weapons, we will remain a nuclear alliance, because we don't believe that a world where Russia, China and countries like North Korea have nuclear weapons, and we do not, is a safer world. And the European nuclear or the NATO nuclear sharing arrangements also is a tried and tested structure. It's a way to have command and control and actually have all allies on board when it comes to something which is of great importance for the alliance. So NATO has many times stated clearly the importance of this, and that remains my position and the position of NATO allies as we agreed in June at the NATO summit this year.
Politico.
Thanks very much. David Herzmann with Politico. I wonder if you could update us on, after your conversations with the EU, about the status of the new NATO-EU declaration. We know that France, in particular, among allies, is calling for much more concrete demonstrations of partnership, not just statements. At the same time, you mentioned the importance of the nuclear planning group, and we know that France does not participate in the nuclear planning group and yet is now the only EU nation with a nuclear arsenal. So does that diminish the value that you see in the nuclear planning group? Thank you.
Now, the nuclear planning group remains important, and it's a French decision to not be part of that, and they have not been part of that for many, many years. So that has not changed. We have three nuclear powers in NATO, United States, United Kingdom, and France, and then two of them are part of the nuclear planning group with the rest of allies, and then it's a French decision that they don't want to be part of that, and of course that's a decision we fully respect, but nothing has changed recently regarding that status and the way France is contributing to NATO also when it comes to nuclear deterrence. I think it is very important that we now are working on a third joint declaration between NATO and the European Union. I had the privilege of agreeing to the two previous declarations with President Juncker and President Tusk back in 2000 and, 2016 and 2018. And I welcome now this opportunity to also work with on a new or a third joint declaration with President Ursula von der Leyen and President Charles Michel. These declarations are important because they shape the framework for our cooperation. Then there is a lot of follow-on work, and we also identified a lot of areas as a follow-up of the previous declarations, like, for instance, military mobility, maritime security, cyber, hybrid, and many other areas where NATO and the EU are working together. We do a lot together. I mentioned, for instance, Kosovo, where NATO soldiers support the efforts of European diplomats or EU diplomats. The Aegean Sea, where we have the NATO naval deployment or presence, and of course cyber, where we share real-time information, and many other areas where we work together. So I think the time has come to make a third declaration, to update, to set out the ambitions for how to further strengthen NATO-EU cooperation. We share the same values, we share the same challenges, we share the same neighbourhood, and of course to a large extent we also share the same members. More than 90% of the people living in the European Union, they live in a NATO country. So it absolutely makes sense that we work together. And I have discussed this both with President Charles Michel and with President von der Leyen, and the aim is to agree a new joint declaration in December by the end of the year.
We have time for two very quick questions, one in the room here, gentleman in the middle, and then we'll try to take one last online. So,
Lucas Tomlinson, Fox News. Mr. Secretary General, are you happy that NATO forces are out of Afghanistan so you can focus on China?
That was a very difficult decision to decide to end 20 years of military presence in Afghanistan. But we made it together after extensive consultations. The alternative was to continue to stay in an open-ended military mission and risking more violence, more casualties, and also most likely we would have been forced to increase the number of NATO troops. Then, of course, what has happened in Afghanistan is a tragedy for the Afghan people. And it's heartbreaking for all of us who have supported Afghanistan for all these years. Now we are consulting NATO allies and partners on how we can continue to hold the Taliban regime accountable for what they have promised on terrorism, not to make Afghanistan a safe haven for international terrorists again, what they have promised on human rights and also on safe passage. We continue to work on how to get people out. NATO allies, of course the United States, but also other NATO allies, were able to evacuate more than 120,000 people. NATO played a key role with our civilian presence at the airport, coordinating efforts. And we're also now working on resettling those Afghans who were able to get out of Afghanistan, and actually have made significant progress over the last weeks and days. And I will also thank those allies who are accepted to resettle thousands of Afghans who have supported us in different ways and their families over the last years. Then, what we have seen in NATO over the last years is actually a fundamental shift, where we are now refocusing our efforts on collective defence to respond to a more competitive world, state-to-state rivalry, and that of course includes the rise of China, which is fundamentally changing the global balance of power. And in parallel with that, we have gradually reduced the resources, the soldiers, the personnel we have in missions beyond our borders, like for instance Afghanistan. But this actually started before the latest decision to end our mission, because not so many years ago we had more than 140,000 troops in Afghanistan. Then a year ago it was like around 10,000, and now it's zero. So there has been a development over at least since 2014, where we have significantly increased our military presence, readiness in Europe with the new battle groups in the eastern part of the alliance. We're tripling the size of the NATO response force to more than 40,000, increasing defense spending by all allies, all European allies and Canada. and investing in high-end military capabilities, collective defense, investing in technology, resilience, the new innovation fund we established today. All of this is part of a broader fundamental shift of the alliance, where we focus more and put more efforts into collective defense to respond to a more competitive and more dangerous world. And that's exactly why NATO is changing, because the world is changing.
One very quick, I'm sorry, we have one very final question online from Radio Television of Montenegro. Ivan Mijanović.
Thank you very much. Actually, I have a question about alleged mistrust in Montenegro as a NATO partner. There were some allegations that during NATO summit in June, there was unofficially said that the alliance should not share all the information with the new government of Montenegro because of the influence that Serbia and Russia have on it. So could you confirm this? Were there any concerns about information sharing with Montenegro? Thank you very much.
So Montenegro joined NATO not so many years ago, and Montenegro is a highly valued ally. Montenegro contributes to our shared security in many different ways, and I also appreciated the presence of the Defense Minister of Montenegro at our meeting yesterday and today at the NATO Defense Ministerial meeting here in Brussels. NATO has very strict security protocols on, for instance, sharing of information. I cannot go into the details about these protocols, but I can just assure that we are able to share information in a secure and safe way.
One day earlier, Maria Zakharova, the spokesperson for Russia's foreign ministry, addressed the NATO meeting that began earlier that day. Speaking at her regular weekly press conference, she took this question from a reporter for the Moscow Post.
We shall continue the topic of Brussels. There are numerous signs of hostility towards our country, Russia's ally Belarus, coming from Brussels. One gets the impression that the Kremlin and the Russian MFA are dealing not with two separate entities, NATO and the EU, but with a consolidated Euro-NATO union. The NATO accord in the relations has already been broken. What can be expected in the relations with the EU? And my second question is, one would think that the main share of responsibility for predictability and stability in Russia's relations with the collective West now falls on Washington. Brussels has distanced itself from the issue. Can this be considered a loss of face, not only for NATO, but also for the EU? I'll start with your first question. As far as I can see, it was about whether it is a single hybrid entity or two separate structures. We are covering this topic one way or another all the time, and to what extent this cord was broken between us. Answering your question, well, it's yes and no at the same time. Let me explain why. If we speak about this cord that you used as a metaphor, regarding NATO, it's not far from the truth. After the NATO's disastrous withdrawal of forces from Afghanistan, NATO headquarters in Brussels is redoubling its efforts to justify its existence by hyping the so-called Russian threat, and is deliberately working actively to destroy the remaining channels of our cooperation. Apparently, cooperating with Russia is unnatural for NATO as it is now, and conceptually, this organization has been unable to overcome the mentality of the Cold War, thus remaining its vestige. And after the cessation of all practical cooperation with Russia and the suspension of military ties between us, NATO's slide back to the confrontational patterns has only accelerated. As for Washington's policy of containing Russia via NATO, undoubtedly it affects EU policy as well. We have repeatedly elaborated on this issue. This change and substitution of notion in the political context apparently takes place when the EU's political weight, political significance is decreasing, and right now it is at a very dangerous point because its political will is being repressed by that of the NATO. Who plays the key role in this process? Well, there is a very active group comprising a few EU member states that have not overcome their irrational historic phobias regarding Russia. We have covered a few of them today. Not only do they exploit and create anti-Russian myths in their opportunistic interests, in the interest of the global customer, we know who this customer is. The characteristic feature of their destructive activities, they are trying to instill this flawed ideology in other participants of the EU, and they use the EU's inherent decision-making mechanisms. And they do this at the instigation of their customer, their client. And they do this for their own selfish purposes. It is a European integration project. It was supposed to become a unifying power, creating its own internal agenda rather than being friends against someone. These groups' efforts are consistently strengthening the institutional link between the EU and NATO. And I believe that the NATO is currently dominating over the EU. As a result, regarding the Russian issue, the EU is still guided by obsolete and unconstructive approaches that link the whole range of our relations with the implementation of the Minsk agreements, which, as we know, are systematically sabotaged by Kyiv, and they fail to see what's going on in the reality. There is some kind of a political agenda. Let me give you just one example. The EU originated from the European Economic Cooperation. The basis for their cooperation is linked with the economy. What kind of economy? All kinds of economic activities. And the EU's benefit from interacting with Russia is obvious. However, the EU again is acting against its own interests, against the national economic interests of its member states. These anti-Russian attitudes are prevailing. Was it created in the EU on the basis of some shared approach? Of course it wasn't, because the opinions of most EU states were not taken into account at all. Those doctrines were imposed on them from other countries that were lobbying such approaches from outside, I mean the NATO powers. They created some concepts that interlinked these powers. The triad of principles, push back, contain, and engage, invented by European structures just this year, risks becoming a kind of a Bermuda Triangle in which the preconditions for rethinking relations with Russia in a more constructive way may be lost for good. I wonder what the fertile ground for integration of EU countries could be, and in what way push back, contain, and engage principles are in line with these basic ideas that constitute the EU. How can these countries integrate all the while interacting with another country that they depend on, where there is a mutual dependent kind of relation on at a number of issues, and yet they choose to push back, contain, and engage? At the same time, one should point out that most EU states, 21 out of 27, are NATO members. However, it should not make these structures identical in theory or in practice. Despite the remaining differences between us, the EU remains our geographic neighbors and largest trading partner. Contacts between Russia and the EU continue, including at the highest level, and cover a broad range of issues.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.